WNST.net and Baltimore Positive, and it's never more positive than when I head out to Catonsville and we zoom in with the former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller for another Baltimore Positive segment. All of them, of course, brought to you by our newest sponsor, Taharka, with the Honey Graham ice cream. This is a shout out to everybody at Taharka. This carton is empty. I am out of Honey Graham ice cream. I need some. Also got to get over to Catonsville and see Don to get some of those wings over at our dear friend State Fair, maybe some chicken and waffles and some shrimp and grits to go, as well as our friends at Fadley's, where they are shipping crab cakes everywhere. We're missing the Preakness. I'm wearing my pink seersucker and my black-eyed Susan outfit and my Keep the Preakness pin here, but certainly if you're feeling Preaknessy, if you're feeling Baltimore-y, if you're tuning in from other places, if you're not driving downtown right now and you're social distancing, you can get Fadley's crab cakes one click away on their website. And of course, Moeller and Gary Realty with our dear friend Jeff Moeller. And I will have a post-pandemic conversation with him once they let the kids out to run into Grandpop's lap down the street in Catonsville. Don, take it away. How are things pandemic for you? I mean, it's not often I get to double Baltimore County and Anne Arundel County executive together. This thing was put together long, long, long before there was a pandemic, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's very, very timely. We're very pleased to have Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman joining us this morning. And Mr. County Executive, we start where we really have been starting with every elected official. When you won this office in 2018, and somewhere down the road in this discussion, we'll talk about that victory and in many ways how surprising it was and how it took some folks, as I said, by surprise. But when you won in 2018, did you ever foresee a pandemic in your future as one of the skill sets you'd need to have?
I did not. I did not see a pandemic. I had a nagging feeling that there would be something big, like a hurricane, maybe. That's a little bit more predictable. You know, I grew up in a household where my dad was Assistant Secretary of Defense for Civil Defense during the Cold War. So he was Mr. Bomb Shelter, you know, trying to get everybody to build bomb shelters and figure out how to evacuate cities in nuclear war. And so, you know, emergency management was kind of, I grew up with it. So I kind of had that in the back of my mind, but pandemic is it's a different kind of an emergency.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit right off the gun then, because it seems to me, and having been in local government, and I know I've had this discussion recently with Baltimore County Executive Ochevsky and his team. You've just released your budget. It is unimaginable for me to put my local government hat back on now and try to think about how you're going to tackle this fiscal crisis that is going to confront local leaders across the nation. So can you sort of give our listeners an overview of your budget and your priorities, and then how all of those priorities are going to be affected by what you're dealing with?
Yeah. Everything changes. So the budget would normally seem like a really big deal that okay, we got $63 million less in revenue projected than we did. That number was actually over a 3-week period. We got revenue projections that were pretty good, and 3 weeks later, they were down $63 million. So our budget process became very different. And that was really deferring progress that we were making. And we can live with that. What's really changed is that government was not designed to move quickly. And I'm from outside government. You know, this is my first government job. I'm a farmer. I was an old community organizer, running a business, running a nonprofit. Boom, boom, boom. You know, you respond to things quickly. Government's not designed that way. Purchasing, you have all, you know how that works. There's all sorts of red tape. And we've had to respond quickly. And so the good news from our perspective is that we have great people in the county, in Anne Arundel County government, and everybody's job has changed, and everybody is moving much more quickly. The fact that we're working from home, most of us, is also making it different. There are a lot of efficiencies with working at home. We're on Zoom meetings all day long, jumping from meeting to meeting, not spending time shaking hands and giving speeches. So I feel like we're moving at a speed that is probably unprecedented, And that feels good because we're able to, we're responding quickly. We're not responding as quickly as we'd like, but, you know, getting food distribution sites open, creating a map to do that, creating an eviction prevention program. I mean, the list goes on and on. Figuring out how to do contact tracing, you know, with a team of 100 people as opposed to a team of 7 people. It's exciting in a way, but it's a little, you could say it's terrifying, but you're in it, so you just do it. It's just the way people respond. They move quickly when they have to.
Anne Arundel County Executive Stuart Pittman is our guest, along with Don Mueller, former Baltimore County Executive here on Baltimore Positive. Stuart, you and I got together the first time I met you. I was wearing the same jacket. It was a year ago this weekend. It was at the Preakness. Ross Petticord, who I was one of his proteges, a protege of many, he'll still own that back at the Evening Sun in the 1980s in horse racing. And to think, I thought I might see you again before, and I was looking forward to seeing you in Catonsville before all this mess broke out. But crisis management, you know, 8 weeks into this, you talk about your family and your background and the individual things. And you even said there's a little euphoria you feel about, like, getting after and tackling challenges, that you put together a team for a hurricane, right? And now you get your situation stressed to some degree. Tell me what you've learned about the crisis management that maybe you thought you were prepared for, but 8 weeks ago when this hit everyone sitting in your position, there's not a lot of places you can turn for the handbook on this. You have to refer probably to a lot of the things your father taught you, right? And things that are intuitive and decisions where you have to be ahead of the curve and all of this in crisis management.
Yeah, I mean, you basically call on any skills that you've learned in your life. But you find out who your best people are. You find out who can move quickly. Some people are better in a crisis, but not as good when things are moving slowly. So there's that. You know, I've been turning to that's been really helpful is the other county executives in the big 8 counties in Central Maryland. We were actually having daily phone calls. Now we've brought it back to 3 days a week, and we compare the programs we're putting together. We compare the way we're responding. We talk about our strategy with dealing with the state of Maryland and with our congressional delegation. And because we're all experiencing the same thing at the same time, it's become sort of a family of county executives and the mayor. Jack Young is a county executive in this group. There's not much difference. So that's been a really nice, steady group to stay connected to.
Well, that's a nice jumping off point.
I've got to say something about the seersucker, you know, the pink seersucker suit you said you were wearing. That's so cliche, and that's so different from the world we're in right now that it just cracks me up.
Well, I mean, it would be Black Eyed Susan Friday, right? I mean, that's where we would be this weekend, and we talk about what Baltimore means, and I think it's a great jumping off point, because the reason we started Baltimore Positive, and I think I had told you when I met you, hey, maybe we'll get you on, and Don knew you, and here, next thing you know, you're booked. It took a year, but we got it done, and we certainly have a lot to talk about and a lot of ground, but, you know, I would think for all of this in running for office and wanting to do this, Baltimore right now, over the next 2 weeks, we've had all the mayor candidates on this week. Don got his voting form. He was showing on Facebook the other day how we're going to vote and what we're going to do in Baltimore. And you talk about all the county executives getting together. Where does Baltimore sit in all of that? I mean, all of you are watching this election like anybody else, I would think, and saying we need Baltimore to be strong. And I'll be honest with you, Stuart, not everybody in your county feels that way. Not everybody that voted for you or against you or Harford County or any of these counties. I hear a lot of people, and this is what broke my heart, and this is really why we started Baltimore Positive, which was, I'm not going to Baltimore anymore. I'm done with that place. I'm never going there again. And I would think, I said to Don, I hope people don't feel that. I hope we're not running government that way, that we want Baltimore to burn, because I live in Baltimore, and that's why I started this. It is heartening to hear you say that all of these people are coming together and that Baltimore is a central part of that. We all know Baltimore needs to get better, but hopefully through this cycle and on the backside of this bad thing, there is a feeling of, hey, we got to lift Baltimore up too. And I know we're all going to have our own individual challenges, from Pasadena to Severna Park and every place that is your jurisdiction, but every one of you from Harford County, Howard County, Baltimore County, and now yourself, have all talked at length about the importance of Baltimore, and we've tried to talk about the importance of our museums and our harbor and all of that, that so many people from your county, we need you to come back at some point to make the whole thing strong.
Well, yeah, you know, and it's funny that we can tie the Preakness into this, because that same day that I saw you in your pink Seersuckers, Jack Young was at the Preakness in his pink jacket. And I've been teasing him about his damn pink jacket ever since, too. I can't wear pink, but Jack can wear pink.
Farmers don't work in pink. Is that what you're telling me?
No. Sometimes the coveralls look a little pink, but...
You know what? Glassman was wearing pink the day we were with him, I think. So, yeah, have at that.
A lot of people wear pink at the Preakness, but you'll never catch me wearing pink ever in my life. Thank you. Enough said on that. But
go ahead.
No,
I'm
learning a lot about you, Stuart.
Come back, because you were going to make a point about Baltimore.
Yeah, in terms of Baltimore and the fact that it's the economic driver of the region, it's the cultural center of the region, it's Baltimore City. I mean, I love Baltimore. I think most people in the area have, I hope they have good feelings about Baltimore. But I got to say that during the campaign, there was a movement by some groups in North County of our county that were demanding that we shut down the light rail because they didn't want people from Baltimore coming in and there was too much crime on the stations. Well, you know, the police department said, no, actually, there's been a decline in crime in those stations, but it was a perception. And the guy I was running against, you know, got on board that and said, yeah, we're going to cut some stations and we're going to reduce service. And so I came out and said, no, we need more public transportation. We need to increase, not decrease. That was a sort of anti-Baltimore. But I'm going to say something that you'll rarely hear anybody say from outside of Baltimore, which is that the suburban counties around Baltimore stole Baltimore's tax base. And that's a big part of the problem with Baltimore right now. It's revenue. They've had to increase their property tax rates because of the loss of the tax base. But, you know, in the suburbs, we said, come on out. And move into the suburbs, the land of pleasant living. You'll have low taxes and fewer people and less traffic and all of that. Well, I got elected because people kind of said, whoa, wait a minute. I think we're growing too fast and we got too much traffic. We got overcrowded schools and we haven't been able to keep up with the government services with all of the growth. So now it's time for us all to work together as a region and do planning and land use together. So that it makes sense for everybody. And part of that is rebuilding Baltimore's tax base.
Well, I have to build on that as well, Mr. County Executive, because when I hear you talk, it doesn't sound to me like what we think of as a traditional Anne Arundel County Executive when they're talking about regionalism. And I need to jump back to 2018, because I want you to educate our listeners about what pundits miss. So you may well have thought that you were going to win on that Tuesday morning in 2018, and it was a bit of a Democratic wave, but when your victory came in and you won by 4,000 or 5,000 votes, whatever it was, 52% of the vote, I mean, you a fairly, you know, fairly comfortable margin. What did you know about Anne Arundel County in 2018 that those of us who follow this stuff closely missed? What did you see taking place that we missed?
Well, first of all, I saw an incumbent county executive, a Republican who had pretty good war chest, huge war chest, as being a little bit out of touch with his residents. Partly it was just his style, and you know, he was good at some things, but I don't think he was a very good politician because he didn't really connect well with people. But he was somebody who felt comfortable attacking immigrants and had made people angry about that. He was somebody who had refused to give teachers raises, and people were angry about that. He was very much seen as in the pocket of developers and was doing things to spur growth and reduce regulation. And so the general development plan and the small area plans that our communities had put together to guide growth in the county had pretty much been ignored. And it was kind of reckless growth. a lot of anger about that. And so there was a coalition to be built, and that's what we did, is we built that coalition. And it was police, fire, and teachers, largely teachers. They really got out and worked. But it was these community-based groups as well, who wanted to get control of how land use is done in our county. And it was progressives who care about things like poverty, which were never talked about in our county, who don't want to blame immigrants for all of our problems. And so you put that group together, and the anti-Trump people too. I mean, the groups that had formed out of the Women's March when Trump was elected were some of the first groups that I went to, and they were already organized. So all these groups were organized, and you just had to bring them together around a common message, and all of a sudden, things changed quickly.
Well, let me again, I'm just intrigued by this, and someone who lived in Baltimore County, Southwest Baltimore County, for his entire life, and over just up the road from the northern parts of Anne Arundel that you talked about, I spent a large part of my early career in education at Lansdowne. Literally, I could throw a football to the Anne Arundel County line. I've always perceived Anne Arundel County, and I should have said, and my grandparents lived their whole life in Jessup, so I know Anne Arundel County pretty well. I've always perceived it as this, if you use a national label, as this sort of red, right of center county. And what I hear you saying, Mr. County Executive, that really isn't where Anne Arundel County is today.
Yeah, and the right of center, I think part of that is the politicians and the political pundits always said that our county was tax averse. Maybe it was because of the tax revolt when they created our revenue cap on our property taxes, you know, back in about 1990 when all of that was going on, and everybody just assumed that that's how people felt. I think there have been some demographic shifts. There have been in West County, there was a lot of development and folks who were government employees were moving in, and I think they were a little bit more moderate. But I think it was also the way the county grew. People realized, you know, government does matter. We do need those services. Growth isn't the solution to all problems. And the way it was managed was wrong. So I was able to sort of take that sentiment and put it together with other sort of typical democratic values and present it in a way that worked. You know, the other part is that I'm being a South County farm boy. Maybe I'm not perceived as a threat to some people in the middle. You know, I have some sort of conservative values myself, not on social issues, but on a feeling that the free market can actually have a positive impact. I'm very much, you know, pro business, but I believe in regulation, you know, where it has a public benefit. So, you know, maybe being a farmer helped. So my message kind of came across as a little bit more down home, and maybe being from outside government helped.
Well,
you know what helped the most is being an old community organizer. I spent a decade with ACORN and the National Low Income Housing Coalition and doing organizing work, and so it was made it easier for me to see how to build the coalition.
Well, Master, you know, I didn't realize until I looked up. I mean, obviously, I knew the county executive, but I didn't realize until I looked up in his bio that, Mr. County Executive, you actually began as a community organizer in Chicago, and if memory serves me correctly, another pretty successful elected official began as a community organizer in Chicago. Did you and the 44th president ever cross paths out there when you were community organizing?
Well, there's a book that says we did, but we did not. So it was a book written, you know, basically accusing Barack Obama of being a socialist and a threat to the American way of life. And there was a chapter about his relationship to the organization I worked for, which was called ACORN, Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now. They thought that he and I had some sort of a relationship because I was organizing in a place called Altgeld Gardens, public housing on the far south side. And We did some very high visibility stuff about a toxic waste landfill, asbestos in the units, and all. I then left, and I went and organized in Iowa. Then Barack Obama came in with a different organization, but was organizing in the same public housing project, Oak Hill Gardens. So I've never met him, but when I do, if I ever do, it's on my bucket list. I'm going to say, you know, I'm that white boy from Acorn at Oak Hill Gardens, and he's going to laugh and say, I remember hearing stories about you. Because, yeah, I went to jail, not for long, but, you know, we did some crazy stuff that he would have heard about.
Did you always know you were going to run for office? I mean, it sounds to me like that, you know, when you were a kid, thought maybe one day I'll be a county executive, I'll be some sort of, I'm going to run for office and I'm going to change the world.
No, I swore I would never run for office, and my wife told me she'd divorce me if I ever ran for office.
Wow, okay, so I got to get to the core of this.
I know that.
Well, yeah, you know, when you're a community organizer, you're on the outside, and you really believe you build power by bringing people together. And then you target government, you try to tell them what to do. So, you know, mayors and county executives aren't your heroes. You know, they're the people you beat up on. So it was considered selling out to be in public office in my world. That's kind of
extraordinarily, like, that's very counterintuitive. Like, I would think the reason you would run is because you really can change stuff as opposed to just being a loudmouth and maybe open
that is the reason I ended up running, is that I wanted to change stuff. And I came to the conclusion that maybe I had the skill set and there was this opportunity, and that, yeah, I could do all those things that I've been fighting for my whole life better from the inside than I could on the outside.
All right, give me three things that you've done right off the bat that first couple, 3 months, 6 months, that literally you could say changed it, not fixed it, but just made it better. I mean, I was asking these questions 2 years around here before we formed Baltimore Positive when Don was running Baltimore County, really inspirational to me. He was my guidance counselor in 1982. I asked the question, can we fix this? Can it be fixed? And, you know, county executive, I got on a plane with the Ravens. I've gone to Indianapolis, Cleveland, Nashville, Charlotte, these places that I've gone for 30, 40 years that have gotten better. Perception, you know, reality, I don't know, but they certainly look like they're functioning better and cleaner and safer and more vibrant and all of that. And I thought, well, that happened here once. Can that happen again? Of course it can happen again, but then you have to, like, make it happen. And the only way that happens is with leadership, right?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I did a video where I did 12 months in 2 minutes. I was imitating the president of New Zealand who did 2 years in 1 minute. And you talk really, really fast and you go through your accomplishments. We put it up on it, you know, I was talking so fast, I was kind of yelling, which maybe I overdid it a little bit. But there was a long, long list. But, yeah, if you want three, I mean, we came in the first week and we got rid of this program that the previous county executive set up where our detention officers were turning people over to ICE for deportation called 287G. It was very controversial and I had to go out into the communities and explain it. I went into the communities where there were the most people opposed to try to explain this.
By the way, I'm the son of a Venezuelan immigrant, so I appreciate that.
Okay.
You know, county executive, I think, I don't want you to get back to the list, but that 287G, our good friend Kevin Kamenetz and then myself, as you said, it's not always popular. We took the same stance, as you know, as you did in Anne Arundel. And, yeah, the haters were never happy that we wouldn't participate in 287G, but we saw it as a public safety issue. But go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. People need to trust their police and their public safety and what, you know, wherever country they came from and whatever their immigration status. We're all one community. Well, and then the budget that we put together last year, it was a very different budget than Anne Arundel County had seen. You know, we're still in the lowest taxed county in the Big Eight in Central Maryland by quite a bit, but we did have to increase some taxes to be able to get the revenue to be able to catch up. So we had a budget that really delivered for schools and teachers that got us back on track on both police and fire to get the numbers of police officers and firefighters that we needed. And we did some things on land use, too. So we've really reorganized the way the developers are, you know, they're kind of uncomfortable about it, but they're realizing, okay, new rules, we can probably live with them so that we can shift development into transit-oriented development and smart growth strategies. But we really had to crack down, and we had to say, okay, we're going to enforce our environmental regulations. And we put out all these green notes that said, you know, so that everybody would understand the new rules. We passed some legislation as well related to that. And at the same time, we did affordable housing. So we passed a workforce housing bill. We passed a fair housing bill that included, you know, you can't discriminate based on source of income. And so, you know, I feel like we govern based on our values, and we did exactly what we said we were going to do. We made a lot of progress in that first year. This year, we're not going to make the same kind of progress. We're not going to be spending the same kind of money. But my budget message was, we're not giving up on our goals. We're just deferring some of the implementation. But at the same time, we're making huge progress on the safety net. So we've got an eviction prevention program, and the way we're doing feeding folks and you know, delivering for families that are in the most need, I think it's an opportunity to really deliver there in this pandemic, in some cases using the federal CARES money to be able to deliver.
And Mr. County Executive, you almost from the beginning, I think, were pretty outspoken about an issue that we talk with all elected officials about, and that's the whole opioid addiction process. And I want to combine that because I noticed in your budget that you put someone in place in this latest budget that's going to focus on opioid addiction, and then you also put that person in charge of gun violence. And that might surprise people, and they think of Anne Arundel County as this bucolic place, and they're going, gun violence? Why would the county executive be focused on that? So can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing in the area of opioid addiction, and then why you also had this person pick up the responsibility for gun violence?
Yeah, so we're doing a lot in our Department of Health. I have said that you shouldn't measure the efficiency and the quality of government based on the size of the tax base. It should be the health and wellness of the people. And so I hired this guy, Nilesh Kalyanaraman, as our health officer. I got him out of Baltimore, where he was running healthcare for the homeless, and he's hit the ground running. But we've taken some issues and put them in the health department. And the model that we're using was already in place. It was the opioid intervention team. It hadn't met for a year when I came in, but it was department heads who all have strategies and a piece to play in the opioid crisis. And so we put together a gun violence prevention task force that recommended that this be considered a public health issue as well. We have shootings just like every other community has shootings. Not as many as some, but it's, you know, it's a major cause of death, and we have to look at it as a public health issue like every other cause of death. And so we decided to create a gun violence intervention team, the same model, where you get the departments that have a role to play. There's everything from mental health to police and the health department as well. And so because it's a parallel model, we needed somebody to manage those two teams and keep them alive and keep them moving forward. And so we hired one person to do both things.
Well, also in line with that, and I appreciate your time, and I know we're coming up on the clock here soon, but a couple of key issues that we still, I think, need to address. Number one, talk a little bit about the impact of this pandemic on small business, particularly in Anne Arundel County. And then that really is going to segue us into the fact that recently the governor has indicated that counties can make a decision whether or not to begin to slowly open up and enter into what he refers to, I guess, as phase one. So can you sort of walk our listeners through the whole small business issue and what role government's going to play in Anne Arundel County to help them, and then how you are going to react to the governor's latest pronouncement that we can begin to ease into phase one?
Yeah, by the time this actually airs, probably we will have been made some announcements that we haven't made yet. I just got off a call with our health officer. It was just last night, 5 o'clock, that the governor actually surprised us, because we thought that we were going to be talking about a little bit less reopening than he announced.
I'm going to interrupt you there for a second, yeah. Executive, and I apologize. But when I'm looking at comments recently from local officials, it seems like they were a bit blindsided by the governor last night. How do you account for that? What was the sense from the local officials that we didn't see this coming?
Well, it has been frustrating. It happened last week when an announcement was made that 7 o'clock the following morning that people were allowed to start boating again, golfing, a number of openings that we didn't know about, that we had to staff up. So we had to get our wreck and parks people and our fire department rescue boats and redeploy the staff to make it all happen. So we asked the governor, please engage with us. You know, the big seven big county execs are over 80% of this pandemic, of the cases. So we did have a call with the governor the day before, and he did tell us that there was going to be, he actually described it as for businesses, curbside pickup, and for churches, outdoor religious ceremonies. And then he announced, actually, it's 50% for all retail. So 50% of your capacity is allowed. So and 50% occupancy in churches. So, you know, Angela also, Brooks, mentioned that her church is 4,000 people show up on a Sunday.
Right.
So does that mean 2,000 people are going to show up for church? You know, and it was supposed to be based on, you know, on the four pillars that the governor himself had identified, making progress on those. And, you know, I don't need to go through them all, but we haven't made progress on most of those. And in fact, it's partly because the state has not delivered, you know, on the testing capacity, on the contact tracing. We've actually delivered in our county on contact tracing ourselves, on the PPE. And our hospital numbers are not declining. They've leveled off. So it was a little bit of a surprise. And so it's up to us to sit down with our health officer and figure out what to do. Now, the small business end of it is the most painful part of all of this, because it isn't fair that a Walmart is open, but a little hardware store is closed. And we are looking at every single situation, trying to do what's right to prevent the spike. We know there's going to be a spike from this opening, to keep the spike from being too large. So we're announcing what we're calling, through our Economic Development Corporation, a small business customer and employee protection program. So rather than giving grants just to general grants to small businesses, of which we would be a drop in the bucket to pay their staffs to stay open, these are grants to pay for adapting to the new environment as they reopen. So that can be technology, so that people can work at home. It can be barriers to separate people in the workplace. It can be signage. It can be even vehicles to do delivery where before people were coming into the stores. So it's going to put our staff in a position where they're dealing with these businesses one-on-one and advising them about best practices. And our health department is going to have to staff up to do it. It's interesting that the reopening is going to take a lot more work than the closing did. It's going to mean that to do it right and to do it safely, it's going to be a lot of staff time to work with these small businesses to do it in a way that we don't create the spike, so that we end up extending this thing out and really hurting ourselves.
Well, as a small business owner, I appreciate that, County Executive. County Executive Stuart Pittman joining us here from Anne Arundel County. We were slated to have him a couple of months ago, and then we brought him back. And, you know, I thought Don booked you this week because it was Preakness Week. And I think maybe in your mind, that's why we were getting together. We were going to have some chicken and waffles over. I believe we were going to do State Fair with you. So
black-eyed suit.
I was going to wear my pink seersucker the way I was a year ago. But I want to give you a little oxygen to talk about the horse industry and the Preakness. I'm wearing my Save the Preakness hat, and also my dear friend Ross Petticord, who's also a friend of yours, who was a mentor to me back in the 1980s when I worked at the Evening Sun. The retired racehorse project and all that it means to you. This is weird for you, right, not being at the Preakness this weekend?
Yeah. I mean, I was part of the horse world. I did start this organization to transition thoroughbred racehorses into second careers, so that they would have good, long, productive lives, you know, with loving owners after they race, and big, very successful organization that's now become, it's national, and it, I was able to step away and hire somebody else to run it. So my connection to horse racing is through that. I've never actually been an owner or of a racehorse or trainer in that world. But they're beautiful animals. They're magnificent, and it's wonderful, and it's good for our economy. It's good for our rural areas, these horse farms. And so, it was really cool to be at the Preakness with Jack Young, on the day where we went into Belinda Stronach's tent, the owner of the track. And remember, that was at the moment where, it was practically warfare between Baltimore and the Stronach group about, you know, keeping the Preakness in Baltimore.
It was a very uncomfortable environment. I will give you that. And not just because John Angelos was looking at me either. So.
Yeah. So we went over there, and I went over there. I didn't want to go over to Belinda's tent without Jack Young. I wanted to be with Jack Young because I didn't want to seem like you know, here we're Anne Arundel County, we're going to steal the Preakness, because I never wanted to get the Preakness necessarily. I just want to make sure Laurel Racetrack is in good shape, which is going to happen anyway. So we went over there, and Jack said, "Yeah, I'm going to go talk to her," and I said, "Well, good luck," and they basically just put a reset button and came up with this deal, which I think is a fantastic, fantastic deal, because Park Heights, you know, when I did the Thoroughbred makeover for the Retired Racehorse Project, it was a Pimlico the first couple of years. And I spent a lot of time planning the event in the parking lot there. We had stabling for horses, and folks in the neighborhood were walking through and getting pony rides even on some of these ex-racehorses. And so I got this soft place in my heart for Pimlico. I know it's in bad shape. So the plan that they put together to turn it into a multi-use facility where they could still run the Preakness, it's brilliant. And I just think I was so glad the governor didn't veto it, because there was a lot of rumors that he was going to veto it. It's still going to be a challenge, you know, with the casino revenues down, to be able to make the whole thing work. But I think we'll be able to do it. And that was, you know, that was a really special Preakness that day to be there at the beginning of salvaging that whole thing.
Well, you know,
but
Stuart,
if and when we have the Preakness again, you're on record, you still will not be wearing pink. Is that accurate?
I am not.
But he'll take a picture
pink
with me, because we hit it off. We did okay.
Yeah.
You know, Stuart, I'll just say this, for, you know, for all the stench that comes out of Pennsylvania Avenue every night that we deal with here, that there is still local government that's working and people are doing things. And you mentioned, you gave kudos to Jack about, you know, embracing this thing and getting involved. I've had Bill Cole on from the city council talking about this. I really am, this weekend, with it not being a Preakness, I really am envisioning this thing 5-10 years from now, like, again, to your point, a reboot, that the festival of the Preakness can really be a Super Bowl for all of our community, you know, for everyone.
Yeah. And I think when people, you know, when people come back together again, you know, watching these horses run, it's they're not only these sort of magnificent creatures that are almost wild and incredibly powerful, but they're competitive and they have heart. And it's a really kind of inspiring thing for people. And that's the kind of thing we need right now, is to be inspired.
Before we let you run, Mr. Tanishek, thank you for your time. You mentioned that the governor did not veto the Preakness bill, but he did veto a couple of other bills, some of which were very, very important around the state and evoke a lot of emotion. And certainly Kerwin, and the fact that Kerwin was tied to the Built to Learn Act of school construction as well. What's your reaction to the governor's veto of Kerwin, which then also affected the school construction act?
Look, the governor was looking for a reason to veto Kerwin. I mean, he was raising money at the casino, you know, back last year, incredibly large amounts of money from his, you know, some of the big corporate players in the state, to fight against Kerwin, to fight against this plan to make our schools the best in the world. And to me, that's real backwards thinking. I mean, if you really want to do economic development, which he's, you know, that's his brand, is, you know, you create the best education system. We know that's what attracts businesses, and we know that's what builds strong communities. So let's be ambitious. Let's look forward, and let's not just look at this current crisis and think, okay, now we're going to lower our expectations. They already had this thing set up so that no money would be spent when there was no revenue. I mean, they put that, they built that, that safety hatch in there with the bill. So there was no reason to veto this other than some long-term view that maybe public education isn't as important as some of us think it is. You know, we can't all afford to send our kids to private school. So I was disappointed that he did that. And I think we need to challenge ourselves, and we need to look long-term at how we can really make great communities and be a strong economy in the state. And the Kerwin recommendations are one great way to do that.
Well, Stuart, you mentioned, I mean, I met Don Mohler my first day of high school in public school as a public school teacher. So we know public education works. Look at how we all turned out around here. County Executive, it has been an absolute pleasure. It was fun hanging out with you and Ross Petticord for a couple of minutes at the Preakness next year. I hope to do it again next year. If it's Friday, I'll be wearing pink. If it's Saturday, it's whatever my wife tells me goes with her dress and her hat. So you know that, right?
Okay.
I wore pink because I got away with it last year. My wife wasn't around, so she was taking care of her mom.
I wear the same frumpy old jacket every year, pull it out of the closet.
You look like you come from a farm. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, right.
County Executive, thank you very, very much.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate you. County Executive Stuart Pittman down in Anne Arundel County and championing Baltimore City. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time. Don Mohler, former Baltimore County Executive, of course, joining us for all Baltimore Positive Chats. We're going to get back out to State Fair in Catonsville soon as we can. We're also going to be ordering those crab cakes from Fadley's as much as we can, and to get some macaroni and cheese, maybe some crab soup as well from our friends at Fadley's. And, of course, Mohler and Gary Realty and Jeff Mohler, who I'm going to have back on next week as we start to open the state up a little bit, talk more about real estate and selling homes and wearing masks and showing homes. Summertime, people want to list their homes. COVID changed that, but Mohler and Gary can still help you out. Also, one of our new presenting sponsors, I put a picture up of me eating Honey Graham Taharka ice cream. And this is most important, it's made in Baltimore. And most importantly for Steve and everybody over there, my cup runneth empty. I need some refill here on my Honey Graham, as well as some pistachio and some Wake and Bake. Taharka, made in Baltimore. We'll be telling you more about that here on Baltimore Positive. I am Nestor. Big appreciation to all the county executives that have joined us, all the mayor candidates you'll find out at Baltimore Positive in our repository, as well as a lot of university leaders. Doing good work around here. Big appreciation to former Baltimore County Executive Don Mohler, my partner. I am Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Keeping calm, staying local, and always Baltimore Positive, even though we didn't have the Preakness this year.